Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXC. That's 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Tom Antonov. Tom was born and raised in Allentown, Pennsylvania. He graduated from SUNY Oswego with a bachelor's degree in geology and married fellow Oswego classmate Jeanette Schulenberg. Tom has been employed as a petroleum geologist and environmental geologist. His hobbies include eating, photography, racing. Since 2008, he has competed in 24 triathlons, 12 duathlons, and 15K running races. He also likes to hike and camp. Tom is a member and lay leader at Dolgeville United Methodist Church. His son is an Air Force pilot, and his daughter is a mathematician, data manager in the biotech industry. Tom has no pets, no artificial joints, no false teeth, and no food or drug allergies. However, corrective lenses are required. He's been a male since 1959. Tom, thank you for that excellent autobiography, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you, sir.
Can I ask a question? So does that mean then that prior to 1959, you could have been a woman?
I don't think so. No. I didn't exist prior to 1959.
You didn't? Well, I suppose in your mother's womb, there was a point where you could have become a woman.
You know, there's not, because, not to get too graphic and biological here, but it's contingent upon the sperm. If the sperm has an X and a Y, I think, it's that Y that determines.
Why?
Because it is. Yeah. Because it's got a.
So you're a keep fit fanatic then. You've done a lot of running and keep fit. That's excellent.
Yeah, I follow a George Foreman principle, right? He said that the fight game kept him out of the burger joints. Otherwise, he would eat this planet.
Right.
So it's a good combination, being athletic and having a hobby of eating. You know, one balances the other.
Nice.
So triathlon, that's running, cycling, and
swimming. Yeah,
right.
It's a swim bike run.
And what aspect of the three do you prefer the most?
Swimming and biking are really my real joys in life. You know, outside of family, running I hate doing. That's just I like biking and swimming. And running is just a necessary evil.
It's funny, I enjoy running, you know.
About
10, 12 years ago, I could run 10 miles in the street. I was, you know, I was out running 10 miles regularly.
Wow.
And I really enjoyed it, but to me, it was really a stress reliever. But it's not very good in the joints, unfortunately, in the knees. And
when you're 200 pounds, it's not good on the joints at all. So I do as little as I can.
So, yeah, I've been on a keep fit binge myself. This time last year, actually, I was probably about 15, 18 pounds heavier than what I am just now. And I've just started taking up soccer again. I played last night. Played with all these guys about 20 years old, and I kept up with them all, which to my immense pride.
Yeah, that's great.
So I really get it. I really love exercising. So
yeah,
good for you, mate. Really
thanks.
Good.
I think it'd be a good idea to get to our first song. It is King of Spain by Moxie Fruvis. The song The King of Spain talks about this King of Spain, switching places with a person in Ontario, Canada. It's a retelling of The Prince and the Pauper, basically. And they bring in a lot of like local and political humor, talking about working at a pizza place, vacuuming the turf at the Sky Dome, zambonying the ice. I don't know if that is a verb to zambonying, but...
what were you doing last night? I was zambonying the...
Maple Leaf Gardens. And... they talk about like Bush or Clinton, different world leaders, and they would also tailor the song according to their audience.
It sounds like these guys have got mental health problems. Sounds like they're like some schizophrenic on there. They just jump from one subject to the other.
Well, I don't
maybe
know.
I'm wrong. I've not heard the song.
They did a variety of songs that had some kind of political note to them. There's one song where they talk about Lazy Boy Recliners, and I never understood the song fully, but I think they were making fun of the fact that Canada wouldn't allow Lazy Boy recliners to be imported into Canada.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. That's so what I get
did
song.
They make their
I
own
really
brand? They call them something else, like Lazy Lad or something?
I'm not sure, but we saw the band at a couple of
slightly less active young man.
Yeah. But they're a great band, high energy. We saw them live a few times, me and my kids, and we just really became big fans.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's a really fun song. And so why take this song in particular to the Cabin in the Catskills?
It's a high energy song. It reminds me of my family. My son and daughter were with my wife and I when we saw them at Oswego, and we actually got the band to sign a hat that my daughter was wearing. It was a jester's hat with the bells on the ends. And it's kind of a hat that the guys wore when they were doing the song when we saw them previously. So, right. You know, I remember having my daughter on my shoulders with her wearing the hat, and the guys in the band actually saw her and pointed to her and gave her the thumbs up thing.
And these are fond memories, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So the song has an association of fond memories then.
Right.
Excellent.
Does.
Yeah.
And how did you first get into Moxie Fruvis? Do you remember a time where you heard it and you were like, oh, this is kind of cool, and introduced it to your family and kids? Or?
Boy, you know, I can't recall the exact place we saw them. I think we might have been at the Oswego Fest, the Harbor Fest at Oswego, mm-hmm. and the band was just one of the bands that was
the lineup,
playing. We
yeah.
just, you know, bumped into them, and, oh, okay. you know, they're just so cool. The guys play mostly, you know, acoustic instruments, and they sounded great. They looked great. All the music was fun. They were a funny act to watch, so, you know, we just became attached to them.
Once I was the king of Spain. Now I eat humble pie. Oh, my unspeakable wife, Queen Lisa. Now I eat humble pie. I'm telling you, I was the king of Spain. Now I eat humble pie. And now I work at the Pizza Pizza. 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty, Lord, it looked good on me. Buried in silk in the royal. Palace, that was my home.
Now I eat humble pie.
I'm telling you, I was the king of Spain.
Now I eat humble pie.
And now I vacuum the turf at Sky Dome.
Once he was the king of Spain. Ba-da-ba-ba-dum. Ba-ba-da-ba-dum.
I can't wait. I'm lowering interest rates. My people say,
King, how are you such a genius? There's a roof overhead.
And food on our plate.
It's laissez-faire. I don't even give a care. Let's make Friday part of the weekend and give every new baby chocolate eclair. Once I was the king of Spain.
Now I eat humble pie.
Hey, Bush. Hey, Yeltsin. Got problems? You phone me.
Now I eat humble pie.
I'm telling you, I was the king of Spain.
Now I eat humble pie.
Now the Habs call me up to drive the Zamboni.
Once he was the king of Spain.
Ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to you the Spanish National Orchestra. Most of you are probably wondering, what's he doing working for minimum wage in Canada when he was royalty in Spain? You see, late one night when the palace was asleep, out of my royal chambers and into the garden I creep. And I wait until the appointed time when the moon is lighting the pitch, at which point my peasant friend who looks just like me arrives. We make a switch. Prince and pauper, junior and whopper, world made up of silver and copper. Under my own volition, I took a change of position. So next time you drool in the pizza line, remember, pizza's more luscious.
The king of Spain never rushes.
Once I was the king of Spain.
Now I eat humble pie.
I was looking for offhanded ways to improve us.
Now I eat humble pie.
I'm telling you, I was the king of Spain.
Now I eat humble pie.
And now I'm jamming with Moxie Fruvis.
Once he was the king of Spain.
That was Moxie Fruvis, king of Spain. Interesting song, Tom. It sounded kind of a lot of things going on there. Rap and some kind of South American rhythm and delivery, and
it's kind of like a Latin feel to it.
That
was kind of the coolness of the band. They had a very eclectic set of songs they would do. You know, pretty good variety of different tunes, rhythms.
Yeah, I mean, it was pleasing on the ear. I really enjoyed that. So yeah,
and they're a great stage act too. They're just a lot of fun to watch.
I can see that. I mean, I was watching the video there. You can see there's a lot of energy going on there. Mm-hmm. A lot of jumping about and a lot of kidology and stuff like that. So. Yeah, good choice, mate. I really enjoyed that. So your next item you want to take with you to your cabin getaway is a nylon backpacker's hammock.
Yeah, absolutely.
Daft question. Why do you want that?
When I was a kid, a teenager, I did a lot of backpacking. Virtually every other weekend in the summertime and in the fall was spent in the Appalachian Trail in Pennsylvania. And, you know, I somewhere came up with this. I found this nylon backpacker's hammock, and it rolls up into a size of about a, you know, small grapefruit, you know, so it takes up little space, very light, and it's incredibly uncomfortable to sleep in. But I thought that was, you know, what I would try doing one time, is just sleep in the hammock. But it doesn't work very well, but it's just the coolest thing to lay in to relax. It's just really nice. Peaceful to just string it up between two trees, and you know, you can really relax in the hammock. I like it. So I got into the habit of just taking it with me. Unfortunately, you know, 4 out of 5 trips, it would be raining or would be moving too slow or too fast, mm-hmm. and wouldn't have time to use it. But it was just nice feeling to have that hammock with me.
You know, it's there's nothing better to drive you to the end of the day when you know you've got something to look forward to.
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
And a hammock is something to look forward to, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And as you say, you know, once you're finished doing what you're doing and your bones are sore and you're relaxing, a hammock, there's not much better than that, is there?
That's the whole point. Exactly. Yep. Right. I've just backpacking the past couple of years, seen a lot of really incredible hammocks. In fact, I went backpacking this past summer, and one of the guys I was with had one that he used, and it came with a tarp that he would stake down over the hammock. Mm-hmm. He could put a sleeping pad in there, and they're building them now so that you can really lay pretty flat and be pretty warm and comfortable, even like kind of wrap yourself up in them. I don't know if it's necessarily my thing. To me, to depend on that is a risk, because you need trees or something to tie it to. And if for whatever reason you get to a place where you need to camp or sleep and there aren't trees or not trees in the right spot.
Yeah, I think to solely rely on that, right, is a bit an act of folly, you know, because you end up, as you say, having a rough old night because you're on the floor, you know.
Yeah, well, some people are, because it's an attractive idea, not only because it's comfortable, or it can be comfortable, but because you're eliminating all of the hardware that goes with a tent, the poles and things that might be heavy.
Yep,
so it's meant to be a saving of weight, but I don't know.
Well, it started out as the objective was to sleep in it, and it failed the first time. But after that, you know, when I just have that thing to look forward to at the end of the hike, the end of the day, walking, you know, 8, 9, 10 miles in the Appalachian Trail, just to be able to kick your feet up and lay down in that hammock was great. So it became more of a symbol of me leaving the stresses of the world behind. I was out in the woods with my hammock. Whether I used it or not, it just helped me relax.
Nice.
You know, I was looking up hammocks when I was, you know, obviously before I came here, and it was saying that, you know, the Navy, the armies, like the British Army and the American Army, have tried to use, and the British government actually have tried to use hammocks as a way of saving space and saving money and to relieve a sleeping problem for their troops. And the people in Vietnam, for example, were given hammocks to use during the rainy season. But going back to what you were saying near the beginning of when we were talking about this, the problem was, you could get asleep in a bed, but invariably you were lying in a puddle.
Right.
Because the water just caught in it, mm-hmm. you know.
Yep.
And but the British tried to use them centuries ago in the ships, the military ships, to save space and to save people, you know, in high seas rolling across the deck on beds. Mm. They tried to use hammocks, but I don't think it worked. Well, where it did fail sensationally for the British was that they introduced them to prisons as a way of cost cutting and space saving, and unfortunately, people took advantage, full advantage of the brass rings that were used to construct the said hammocks and made themselves some very nice knuckle dusters.
Very creative.
So, so that didn't really go down well. And I'm sure, you know, given that they were made of and used string and rope, mm-hmm. you know, someone who wants to hang themselves would be easily, could easily do that when they've got a hammock for a bed, you know.
So. Well, for me, it was a place to relax. The strangest place I've seen a hammock used was on a submarine in Buffalo. We got to tour one of the old submarines in Buffalo, and they actually had torpedoes stacked three high and, and three across, so a matrix of like nine torpedoes. And they strung hammocks in between the torpedoes, and that's where the guys slept.
Wow.
Yikes. So, you know, I use mine to relax in the woods, and these guys are sleeping on them, surrounded by torpedoes.
Gives a new meaning to, you know, hey, Joe, did you fart there, or was that something else? You know, was that part of my dream? I don't know. But sleeping amongst the bombs is not something I'd want to do,
no,
you know?
Not very relaxing. No. Yeesh.
Well, I heard that a hammock is actually a wood hammock. It's found down in southern, southwestern, southeastern America. The hammock tree, and the part of the tree is called the hammock, and that's where it originally came from.
Was that right?
I mean, people were working in the Amazon rainforest, you know, felling trees and all that. That's where they would use them to the fullest capacity.
Interesting.
Was in the Amazon. Yeah, brought back to America, I think, by, well, so it says, by Christopher Columbus as a souvenir from his travels to the West Indies or wherever he went. I can't remember where he went. But anyway, and he brought him back to Spain.
Cool.
So, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
A hammock. Shall we move on?
Indeed.
What do we have on our list?
Next is going to be Van Morrison's Moondance.
What a great song.
That's my
favorite. I'm really glad you picked that. Yep. That was a really, really great song. Van Morrison, fantastic singer. From Belfast,
that's
I believe.
Right. Yep.
Do you know anything about Van Morrison?
Not a whole lot, no.
No?
No. Just have virtually every record he's made and a big fan. He's my favorite
artist.
Yeah,
I mean, the music he plays is such soulful music. You know, heartfelt and, you know, that gritty, you know, soul funk and mixed with like Celtic flavours, you know, and it's just fantastic music. So what is it about Moondance? You say that's your favourite song. I know you've picked two. You're actually the first guest who's picked two songs from the one artist, believe it or not.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So Moondance, what?
I've always been a fan of Van Morrison's. Moondance is probably the first song I was attracted to, and it's a romantic song. I like you know, the fact that it he sings about, you know, going for a moon dance in the autumn night. It's just a good setting mentally. You know, I like that picture. And Van Morrison sings you know, he crosses a lot of genres with his music. Including he sings a few songs that have a Christian background to him, or a Christian message, which I really like. So, you know, he's just a cool artist. I like his music. And, you know, I had several of his albums when I was in college, and, you know, they were the old vinyl LPs, and I think I played them so much you could actually see light through them. You know, I just wore them so thin. But
I actually received a record player for my Christmas.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. So I've not started yet, but I'm going to be collecting vinyl again.
Oh, holy cow. Good for you.
Looking forward to it. But, you know, going back to Van Morrison, my favourite Van Morrison song of all time is Coney Island.
Coney Island. It's a good song.
You know, just this little village, seaside town and island, you know. It's just such a, you know, probably for the same reasons why you've picked him. He's such a soulful lyricist, you know. It's the song, to me, is just means something to me. It just strikes a chord with me. It just probably, I'm sure, with the same reasons why he strikes a chord with you. Guy's such a great guy. He's got won six Grammys. He's, you know, he's Brit Award, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Irish Hall of Fame, Songwriters Hall of Fame. He's got an OBE from the Queen, unfortunately. Wow. I don't believe in the OBEs and stuff like that, but he got an OBE as well. And he's been given two doctorates from, one from the University of Ulster, one from the Queen's University in Belfast. He's just that much respected. And
yeah, you know, I liken him to he's a European Ray Charles.
Yeah.
You know, he's just done so much and so diverse with his music, and his lyrics tell stories in all his songs.
It's, yeah, there's so many, you know, if you ask a lot of, you know, highly acclaimed musicians, you know, give me your top five best performers, you know, a lot of them will have Van Morrison in it,
yeah,
you know.
I bet.
I don't know if you've ever, have you heard of the band The Band?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Have you seen The Last Waltz?
No, I haven't.
Last Waltz is the last concert by The Band, and they had guests on, and one of them was amongst guys like Bob Dylan and Neil Young. You know, amongst others, you know, Van Morrison was on, and you actually enjoy it because it was a very young guy at the time, you know, and he'd the shirt open and all that, and you know, and he's not the best looking guy you'll ever see as a front man, you know,
right?
But what he lacks in the archetypal, you know, tall, you know, stony jawed, good looking front man singer, he makes up for the music he produces.
Absolutely.
And the gusto in which he sings it. It's fantastic.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. You know the night's magic seem to whisper and hush. You know the soft moonlight seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more morning dance with you, my love? Make love to you tonight. I can't wait till the morning has come. Yet I know now the time is just right, and straight into my arms you will run. And when you come, my heart will be waiting to make sure that you're never alone. There and then all my dreams will come true, dear. There and then I will make you my own. And every time you just tremble inside. Then I know how much you want me that you can't hide. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, my love? All the night's magic
soft moonlight seems to shine in your place. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, oh my love? Or can I just make some more romance with you, oh my love? One more moon dance with you. La 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 la.
You're listening to WGXE 90.7 Acre. That was the legendary Van Morrison singing Moondance. Great choice, Tom. That was an excellent song.
Thank you.
Now, Tom, would you ever moondance in your Vibram Five Fingers?
I've never moondanced, period. So I don't know. Maybe the Five Fingers would help me. I'll have to give it a try.
Now, before I came here, I had to Google Vibram Five Fingers, and then I saw him. I was like, oh no, it's these shoes that Mike wears.
That's right, I wear them at the gym.
Do you? Yeah, cool.
So you wear them as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Any serious athlete would.
I see. I'll just get my coat then, eh?
And they're meant to, for those who don't know, it's meant to replicate being barefoot. You know, thin, flexible sole that follows the shape of the foot, and then spaces for each toe. So it looks like you're just kind of wearing
a foot glove, basically.
A foot glove, exactly. That's right. Exactly it. I think they're pretty remarkable. Why would you like to bring them to your cabin in the Catskills?
Because again, it's just it equates to relaxation for me.
Cody Lundin without actually having nothing on your feet.
He's the survivalist from Dual Survival. It's a TV show. He's like the hippie that he walks barefoot in every environment.
Really?
The most he'll wear is wool socks, and that's like up in the Arctic when he's knee-deep in snow.
Wow, holy cow. No, it's just it's just the image. It's the concept. It's the it creates in me serenity. I'm walking barefoot. I don't have my dress shoes on. I don't have work boots on. I'm not mowing the lawn. I've got my Five Fingers on, and all's right with the world.
And do you wear them when you're exercising?
No, that's the thing. Like, a lot of people wear them to run because they were sold, I think, initially with the concept that they were running barefoot was the best way to run. You know, they were trying to get people to get away from sneakers. So, you know, a lot of people use them to run. I don't. I got the model that was designed for hiking.
Nice.
So when I go on a day hike or something like that, that's when I'll wear them. Or if I'm just, you know, running around town or something, I'll wear them just casually.
Mike, did you know, say at one time that the company that sold them made claims that they will do X, Y, and Z, and then they didn't, and the people could sue them or something?
That's right. The company made claims that there were a lot of medical benefits, and they would strengthen your foot, and I think kind of prevent injury. And they were sued and agreed in the lawsuit. They settled. They agreed to pay up to $94 to anyone who had purchased a pair of shoes since March 21st, 2009. And I had bought mine and got an email about this, and I thought it was a scam because I was like, yeah, right, they're going to give me back all my money for a pair of shoes. And you had to put in, it takes you to a website, and it took me to a website where it said, you know, enter your like credit card information or something. I don't know. I suppose so it could be credited, but I didn't do it.
Yeah,
like,
don't blame you. No,
not doing that. But apparently it's true. But I don't know. I personally think that they have strengthened my feet, and I think they're really comfortable.
I'm going to have to get a pair of these.
They're a lot of fun. They
really
are. Just,
I think I'll maybe invest some money and get a pair.
You know what's really cool about them, too, is people see them, and they look at you like you're from a different planet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It happens to me.
I was walking into a grocery store while a family was walking out, and it was mom and dad and a six-year-old in front of them, and I'm walking in the door, he's walking out, and he just stops dead when he sees my feet. And he stops, and he's clearly looking at him, and his mom and dad just walked right into him and banged him. He was like kind of scared and awe at the same time, you know, just stopped him dead in his tracks.
Do you know, when you've seen that there, the reason I'm laughing so heavily is because I thought you meant it was the adult that stopped and was looking at your feet.
Well, adults will. You'll see, like, older generation folks will look and see them. You know, it's the first time they see these things, and they do look kind of funny, so... You do get a lot of funny looks.
Yeah, I think I'll give them a shot. I think I'll get a pair.
I've been thinking about getting the hiking model because, you know, a lot of people get the big, thick, heavy hiking boots that are leather and waterproof, but inevitably mine will soak through if mm-hmm. I'm in a lot of water. And when I have hiked on the Appalachian Trail and I'm around people who are on trails a lot, they'll wear simple sneakers that are light, that are comfortable, that dry out quickly. And I've thought, you know, to have a pair of Five Fingers, they're extremely light. I'm sure your feet get wet immediately, but they're likely to dry out pretty soon, pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they might get cold. I might roll an ankle catastrophically with 40 pounds of weight on my back and go tumbling down some mountain.
Well, I don't think I'd recommend doing it with a big backpack. I'll go with a day pack, you know, and the weather's got to be right. I mean, I'm not going to do it in the fall when it might get real chilly, but in the summertime, day pack. Climbing mountains, absolutely. Yeah. A lot of fun.
What do you make of those two guys that just scaled that flat surface where they were rock climbing and they made it to the top? I can't remember where it is, but it was apparently some amazing feat.
Oh, yeah. I haven't heard that.
I'm trying to think of the name of the wall they climbed. I did follow it on USA Today on my iPhone.
But it was apparently they finished it yesterday or something, and it took them days, you know, or maybe a weeks, and you know, apparently it was one of those. If you look at it, it looks like just a flat surface.
That's pretty much what it is.
The size of two Eiffel Towers.
Wow!
And they managed to scale it, and remarkably, and it was one of their dreams to complete it. And they did.
Good for them. I've climbed recently a stepladder 6 feet, and that was pretty scary for me. So.
What a brave man! Remarkable.
Yeah. Were you wearing your fingered shoes?
No, I wasn't. I did it barefoot.
See,
yeah,
you probably
that's even better.
Even more hardcore. Yeah.
So you see, he does like Cody Lundin. See that?
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. One of these. Yeah. That's an idea. He has those wilderness training experiences, Cody Lundin. I think.
Yeah.
Like a school for survival. Cool. And yeah.
Cody Lundin is the man.
Yeah.
I have a lot of time for Cody Lundin. Purely based on the TV program that I watch, so I might meet him and he might be a, you know what, but
not the nice name.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah, he seems pretty genuine.
Yeah. So, anyway, shall we go for Van Morrison Part 2?
Sure.
Now, before we do you know your friend has a nickname, Van the Man?
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, his nickname is Van the Man, and the reason he got the nickname Van the Man. From a guy called Robbie Robertson, who was the lead singer, joint lead singer of the band. And when I was telling you about that, the Last Waltz, you should watch The Last Waltz. I think you would love it. You obviously love music. Watch The Last Waltz. When Van Morrison finishes his songs, he just finishes a song, throws a mic onto the deck, and just walks off as the band's still playing. And Robbie Robertson just says, "There you go, folks. Van the Man." And ever since, that's what he's been called, Van the Man. So, yeah. So, yeah, I just thought I'd pass that on. But a lot of people go to great lengths to watch Van Morrison. Like, one guy has seen Van Morrison 700 times.
Wow.
And he's also had an album cover tattooed onto his body.
Really?
With the autograph on the album. So there's a lot of people who love him. And now, do you like the song Gloria?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you know that Van Morrison was 18 when he wrote that?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's how much of a virtuoso the guy is. Yeah.
Well, so, I'm a huge fan. My wife bought me a ticket, and she and I went to New York City to see Van sing live. Which was a big treat in my life, you know, to see Van Morrison.
Yeah.
And it was a great concert. And the thing I really like about him, too, is he's just so humble. You know, he mm-hmm. never got caught up in the VH1 or MTV deal for maybe obvious reasons to a lot of folks. He doesn't have a face for MTV. But, you know,
but he's a very private man as well.
Yeah, he's very humble, low-key. And I went and saw him do this concert. You know, it was a great venue. Great concert. He played all his new stuff, and it was just fun to watch this guy command the audience like he does without a whole lot of effort. You know, he stands in front of the mic, he plays his guitar, he plays his sax, harmonica, just puts on a great show. And at the end of it, he finished up, and everybody leaves the venue except there's this one guy in the audience.
Is that the guy that's been there 700 times?
I don't know.
But this guy was like yelling for Van to come back out. Come out here. You've got to play your old stuff. That's what we pay. He was just really teeing off on Van Morrison, like really offended that he didn't play his old stuff. So I went over to him, and I was like starting to get into it with him because, you know, this is my, you know, favorite artist, and this guy's chewing him out. And my wife dragged me away. She wouldn't let me confront this guy any longer. Yeah. But I wanted to really find out why this guy.
Maybe you could get a new job as Van Morrison's bouncer.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I would do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I got to hang with Van Morrison.
Listen, if you would go to those lengths to defend Van Morrison, you need to watch The Last Waltz because you'll see stuff that you've never seen before of Van Morrison, and I'll guarantee you'll love it.
Thank you.
that was, again, Van Morrison with Cliff Richard singing Whenever God Shines His Light. Fantastic song. Again, great pick, Tom.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed listening to that there. Now, your next item, something I'm sure that we've talked about it, you love doing, mountain biking. So your mountain bike.
No, I'm not really a mountain biker, but if I'm in the Catskills...
And I thought you said you like cycling.
Oh, I do, yeah, road cycling mostly.
Oh, that's right, I see, sorry.
But, you know, bike riding of any kind really is my panacea. You know, if you get on a bike and it just cures whatever's ailing me. Mm. Joints, mind, elbows, feet, anything. It's just you get on the bike and everything feels good.
Now, can I just ask, see your road bike, is it one of those ones with the kind of S-shaped... You know, the old-fashioned ones, you know, or is it one of the ones that's like that?
No,
I'm doing hand gestures. Nobody can see what I'm doing on the radio.
Well, the answer is none of the above, actually. I have a road bike that's got aero bars on it, so it doesn't have the S shape.
Has what?
Aero bars, so you can get into a tuck position.
I see what you're saying.
You're on your elbows,
yes.
Leaning on your elbows, yeah. And your hands are out in front.
Right.
And then I just bought a triathlon bike about 2 years ago for triathlon, so... Yeah, the one's a real old road bike, probably 14 years old. Steel frame, I put aero bars on it. I used that for triathlons up until about 2 years ago, and then I finally bought my jewelry, a nice semi-expensive triathlon bike. Carbon fiber frame, yeah, the whole nine yards.
It gets blown away in the wind.
Yeah, it's a sweet bike. But this, the one
do you do you have the windswept and interesting helmet?
No, I haven't gone that far yet. If I wore that in Dolgeville, they'd call the cops. Yeah. The aero helmet and spandex, I'd be.
And those finger shoes.
Yeah.
And why the Mesa Runner Schwinn mountain bike?
Yeah, well, that's funny story. I saw the bike at a yard sale in 1998, just before we moved back to Dolgeville, and. The guy wanted $40 for it, and it was in good shape. So I thought I would buy it for my father-in-law, who rides a stationary bike. He has ridden the stationary bike every day since, I think, 1991 or so, when he had a heart attack. So I thought I'd get him a bike he could ride outside. So I spent $40 on this bike for my father-in-law. Took it home and gave it to him, and he rode it once and fell off. And then he handed the bike back to me. So, I scored a bike for myself, even though I was trying to do something, for my father-in-law.
Did you know that you might fall off it, that you might get it back?
I loosened the back.
I see.
Don't tell
well
anybody.
Done.
This isn't being recorded, is it? Yeah. No, it was purely pure intent.
People might hear this.
Yeah. We're hoping, right? It was pure intent. I wanted to give him a bike, but, it didn't work out. So now that's I call it my beater bike. It's not a mountain bike. It's more of a hybrid kind of thing, but it's great for running around town, running errands. I ride that every chance I get around the village. And if I was going to be in the Catskills, the bike would come
mountain
with
bike.
Me. Absolutely.
Excellent. Yeah. The Schwinn company was founded by a German-born mechanical engineer named Ignaz Schwinn, founded in Chicago in 1895. And at that time, bicycles were really taking off in Europe and the United States, but then motor vehicles came along, and especially in the United States, really became the dominant form of transportation. So it kind of squelched his initially booming business that he started here. And then Schwinn got into motorcycles for a while, but the Great Depression drove that out. So then they went back to focusing simply on regular road bikes. A gentleman named Alfred Leturner was able to beat the motor-paced world speed record on a bicycle, reaching 108.92 miles an hour on a Schwinn Paramount bicycle in Bakersfield, California. So a guy went 108, almost 109 miles an hour on a bicycle. Now, I don't know all the details about this. I don't think he was just like pedaling power. 109. He must have been going down a hill. but I can't imagine. He's just like, oh, yeah,
being
boy.
Towed by a car.
I hope I don't fall over.
No, have you ever been on your bike and you've been going hell for leather and you've been doing a hill and you're like, hey, I better slow down here. If something happens, I'm a goner here.
I was doing a bike ride from Buffalo to Albany, a three-day trip. I had a little bag on my handlebars. This was with my old Schwinn Traveler, 10-speed. And I had a computer that would record your maximum speed traveled every time, until you reset it.
And I was going down a hill, and I remember seeing the speedometer hit 50.5 miles an hour. That's the fastest I've ever gone on a bike. But just then, the handlebars and the front wheel started to shake violently, and I thought I was going down. When you're going 50 miles an hour on asphalt, you know, there's not a lot of good that's going to come from a fall.
Yeah, you'll be able to see your knees without the skin on them.
So I've started looking for a place to crash, and fortunately, you know, I was able to brake enough and control the shimmy, and I settled down, but man, it was awfully scary. I never try to maximize my speed going downhills anymore. Oh, coast.
I remember watching the Tour de France. And
those guys are nuts.
And I saw that this guy was flying down a hill and lost control, and he hit a concrete bollard and died, basically.
Yeah, I remember that.
Do you unclip from those in an emergency? Because you clip your feet in, right?
Yeah.
Into the pedals? Mm-hmm. Do they unclip in emergencies like a ski would, like if you're skiing down a mountain?
Well, yeah, if you mean in an emergency, like when you crash into a bollard, your feet might come out of those things. But you have to work to get them out. They don't come out by themselves. There's a special way you got to flip your heel to the sides to get them to pop out.
But yikes.
I actually crashed one time. I T-boned a car. I was going about 20 miles an hour, and I hit the car right in the hubcap, and I flipped over the back of the car over the trunk and landed on my back on the other side of the car on the road.
Wow.
And I landed on my back, and my feet were still clipped in. I was still holding the handlebars, but I'm laying on my back, and I'm looking up, and I was still attached.
The bike's on top of you.
Reading it, riding it, yeah. So your feet stay in those things. You got to...
See, if somebody had taped that happening, you could have been on Ridiculousness.
You're right.
And you could have made some money.
Gone viral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was crazy because it was at an intersection, kind of. So there were people stopped at the red light, and they saw me do this, and they came running over, and they're like, "You are so lucky to be alive," because I landed, I guess, on my head.
Yikes!
But I didn't even know it. I laid there literally on my back with the bike in the air, thinking the pain is going to start immediately, you know. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel a thing. I had a scratch in my elbow. That was it. But when I looked at my helmet, it was shattered in the back. So I did land on my head.
Wow. Thank God.
Boy, those helmets do work. Absolutely.
Speaks to helmets.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wear a helmet.
Yep. You know, we had a guy on. We had a friend of ours on as a guest, Mark and Berwick, a while ago, about a year ago. And he was talking about falling off a building.
Wow.
Something like 40 feet, Mike?
Yeah, two stories. He was re-roofing a two-story building in the winter. It was icy, frosty.
And he fell off the building, and he got away with a few scratches, you know. And
Some internal bleeding.
Sometimes it just, you know, inexplicably, these things happen, you know.
That's right.
You end up with just a few scratches, and, you know, God was looking on over you that day. He's saying, right, yeah, I want you here a wee bit longer, you know.
Yep, that's, you know, Van Morrison sang it, "Whenever God shines his light on me."
Exactly,
you know,
so the light was shone on you that day. The Edison bulb was working that day.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, speaking of light from heaven and God, the word Aruanda in African-Brazilian mythology is this utopian place. It's an ethereal light citadel that orbits the ionosphere of the planet Earth in the spiritual dimension of transition. And your next song is Take Me to Aruanda, sung by Estrud Gilberto.
That's right.
Well brought in there, Mike. See well, it was seamless there, wasn't it? Fantastic, mate.
Master of the segue. And she's
did you use a segue? Oh, sorry.
Those can be, now talk about crashing and burning. Those can be dangerous, right?
I'm sure, yeah.
The gyroscopes give out and skablamo, you bite it.
Didn't the guy who invented them, a guy invented the segue, died whilst on a segue?
Really? Oh, gosh, no way.
I'll need to Google that. I think that's true, yeah.
But Ms. Gilberto was the daughter of a Brazilian mother and German father. She's recorded songs in Portuguese, English, Spanish, Italian, French, German, Japanese, and was also in a couple films. So why take this song, Take Me to Aruanda, to your cabin in the Catskills?
Well, you listen to the lyrics. It paints a pretty nice picture of just a real serene place, beautiful surroundings, creeks, just a real nice, relaxing set of lyrics, great tone. And, you know, again, it's the whole idea of being in the Catskills for me is to relax, and this song kind of paints that picture.
There's a land at Aruanda, diamonds and Aruanda, silver stars on the hilltop, take me to Aruanda. Lots of fish in the stream there, lots of time just to dream there,
golden sun in the valley, take me to Rwanda. There were nobody worries, there were nobody hurries. Easy life waving a welcome, take me there. Leave my sadness behind me, let sweet paradise find me. Heaven waits over yonder, take me to Rwanda. There were nobody worries, there were nobody hurries. Easy life waving a welcome, take me there. Leave my sadness behind me, let sweet paradise find me. Heaven waits over yonder, take me to Rwanda. Take me to Rwanda, take me to Rwanda. Take me to Rwanda, take me to Rwanda. Take me to Rwanda, take me to Rwanda. Take me to Rwanda.
You're listening to 90.7 ACRA. We just listened to Take Me to Rwanda, sung by Astrud Gilberto. Now, Tom, your next item that you'd like to take to the Cabin of the Catskills is a tea sieve for loose tea. Why take that?
Again, it's all about relaxing in the Catskills and being in the outdoors. And one of the things that really helps me relax is a good cup of tea. And one of my favorites is Lapsang Souchong. It's a black tea, and the really notable feature about it is that it's got a really, really strong smoky aroma and flavor. So it just always reminds me of being out in the woods with a campfire. That's exactly what it smells like. So it's a great tea, and it's one of those things that helps me relax.
Mm. And do you take it without anything in it, or do you put anything in it?
The Lapsang Souchong, yeah, it's straight.
Straight.
Yeah, it's... It was kind of cool the way they came up with this. The reason it's smoky is because the Chinese people had a dignitary coming to visit the estate, the tea estate, and they didn't have any tea dried. So they tried to dry some raw tea leaves by hanging them in a barn and building a fire underneath them.
Oh,
so they actually smoked the tea leaves, and I guess that's what gives it its taste and its fragrance.
Uniqueness.
Yeah, so it's a really great tea.
I'll need to look that out because I like a good cup of tea. And Where do you buy your tea leaves?
It's a website, Upton Tea.
Upton Tea, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll need to look out for that because there's something great about, you know, completing the restful period that you're enjoying with a nice cup of tea, you know. Nice winter's night or something, you know. Nice cup of tea.
Yeah.
I grew up with tea. My mum and... used to make tea with, you know, nowadays people use tea bags because
it's
convenient, you get kettles and all that. But when I was growing up, it was tea leaves, you know.
Sure.
And we'd the pot and stuff like that, my mum would put the tea leaves in. You can always, my mum would have the tea stewing on the oven, you know, she'd boil the water, pour the water over the tea leaves and then let it stew on the pot. And then you'd have this stewed tea And it was wonderful, you know, still is, you know, it's fantastic.
Something therapeutic about
absolutely.
Putting the tea.
And it's good for you, you know,
exactly.
Tea's good for you. So, I'm with you. I totally, I'm on your page when it comes to the tea drinking, so good.
Now your final song, now that we're coming to the end, is Take Me to Your Leader by the Newsboys.
Yep.
And they're a Christian rock band. Founded in 1985 in Australia. Why this song?
I discovered this song when my kids were young. They were, I think, somewhere around 9, 8, 9, 10 years old or so. And, you know, we've been always taking them to church. But it got to that point now where they're going to become teenagers. And I wanted something to, you know, find for them that they could sink their teeth into, like, musically. Like, again, MTV was the craze, and there's all that junk out there on TV to see. And I wanted something wholesome for them, and for myself, too. And I saw this video to this song on TV, and it was just fabulous. You know, it was high energy.
It's a good, strong, loud rock song, which I really enjoy rock. And it was just all very wholesome. And then I started to investigate the band, the Newsboys, and really found I was really attracted to their music. It was great stuff for my kids, and it really helped us, you know, get the kids into the Christian spirit and into that lifestyle. You know, they had something fun they could do with Christianity, listen to bands like the Newsboys, DC Talk, Toby mm-hmm. Mac, and those kind of things. So it really helped me, you know, foster a Christian spirit in my kids.
That's absolutely fantastic. I mean, that's something that's very important, and you know, if you find something that helps that along, that's great.
So, absolutely. It keeps the kids away from the raunchy stuff that is really so prevalent in rock these days.
Totally. That was Newsboys, Take Me to Your Leader. Good song. I really enjoyed that. Really, really interesting. Refreshingly so, I have to say. Now, Tom, we could talk for hours. I just know we could. And I would really enjoy listening to some of your stories. However, we have come to the end of the show because we only have a wee hour to talk about things. So, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
It's been great having
you. Thank you.
But before you go, we have one question to ask you.
Okay.
And the question is, Mike, take it away.
How do you take your coffee? Oh, that's a tough one. With cream.
With cream.
Yes.
What kind of coffee do you like? Do you like a strong coffee? Do you like a weak coffee? Or?
I really don't have much of a preference. I'm pretty
flexible.
Pretty flexible, yeah.
What do you brew in the house?
Half-calf.
Half-calf?
Yeah.
Right. Non-committal, Mike, see that?
Mm.
You know?
That's good, because you never know what kind of coffee is going to be available.
Well, that's true. You know? So I'm a coffee snob. I love coffee, strong coffee.
Yeah.
So, but that's good. So you like a bit of cream. Excellent.
That's it, yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you. Hi, I'm Tom Antonoff, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC. Thanks.